At the end of 2023, Mike and I were surprised to discover that Rolling Stone published an update to their 2020 ranking of the greatest albums of all time. As we talked about in a previous episode, Bob Marley and the Wailers album Exodus from 1977 has been shifted from the number 71 spot to the number 48 spot. So we thought we would re-release that episode today with the new and correct number of 48. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sound podcast. Yes. Two guys with no credentials. Reviewing Rolling
Stone 500 greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again here. We're glad you found us at the Sound Logic Podcast, and today we are discussing album number 71 on Rolling Stone Magazine's Top 500 Greatest Albums list. This is Exodus by Bob Marley and the Wailers.
If you've been listening to our podcast for a little while, you may remember tonight's guest from when we reviewed Bob Marley's Legend, the best of Bob Marley and the Wailers. That was originally reviewed all the way back in April of 2020. And at that time, anyway, it was ranked number 46 on the 2012 list as we were journeying through. And my friend Bram Woolley joined us. We introduced him as a Penn State student, and he was somewhat early in his journey at that point, a few years down the road here now. And Bram, you were kind enough to say yes when we asked you if you'd like to join us for another Bob Marley album. So thanks so much for being here. What's changed in your life over the last 2 years?
Well, I'm a lot closer to graduation.
Yep.
And again, thank you for inviting me to join you. I have one more semester to go. I've completed one of my majors and one of my minors. So I'm kind of just finishing up a few last things, and then I graduate. So that's kind of a lot. But yeah,
exciting
other
times.
Than that, just some summer research work and travel.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Yeah.
And I think it's important to add here, Bram, of course, thanks for coming back. That episode, that review that we did, both the original and then when we re-released it for the new list, when Rolling Stone put out the new list, it is still our most listened to episode of all time. It's constantly one of our top few. It could be because it's Marley, but I'd like to think it's because it's you, Bram. Because you're on the episode that it's
so popular.
I think
it's definitely a combination of a very popular album, and then doing a bit of research for this album, I was surprised by there's definitely sort of a lack of already existing like sort of Bob Marley album reviews and explorations. So I think it's kind of filled a niche in a way. You know,
oh, interesting.
At least on podcast platforms.
Yeah, well, that I wouldn't have thought that because he's such a popular artist, but I think you're right. But anyways, people have enjoyed listening to that.
At least in this format where we kind of approach it on like an album level, I think that's
right. That's a good point. So before we get started here and talking about the music and how it's affected us and some of your insight as well, Bram, I want to just go through some general details for this album.
Details.
Exodus was released June 3rd, 1977 on Island Records. This was Bob Marley and the Wailers' 8th studio album. Actually, their 10th album, but there's a... Ben won't like this. There's a live album and a compilation album in that span as well. So, but this is the eighth studio album. All tracks written by Bob Marley. I think a couple co-credits, but it's all Bob Marley on this one. This album charted number 8 in the UK and number 20 in the US. Sales to date, hard to track over the different countries, but definitely over a million. Lower than I would have expected, but definitely over a million copies. A few notes. They took a bit of a different approach for this album. And unlike previous albums, Exodus thematically moves away from cryptic storytelling. Instead, this revolves around themes of change, religious politics, and sexuality. The album, and I didn't really pick up on this first time listening to it, but it's very clear, the album split into two halves. The first half revolves around religious politics, and the second half is focused on themes of making love and keeping faith. So two distinct sides there. A little background to the recording on, and we might talk about this as well as we get into it. On the 3rd of December, 1976, so about 6 months before this came out, an assassination attempt was made on Bob Marley at his home. He was grazed by a bullet on his chest and his arm was hit. He survived. His wife was also shot and she survived as well. Not too long after that, he left Jamaica and went, it says he was exiled, but he left to London. He went to London, and that's where they recorded this album, in London, England. This album, Exodus, and we talked about Legend, which is an extremely successful album, millions and millions of copies. This album, Exodus, though, has more tracks featured on that greatest hits than any other Bob Marley and the Wailers records. And last note I have here, Bob Marley conceived Exodus, the title, as the album title before even writing the song. So he kind of had the vision before they even started, perhaps related to his journey at the time as well.
It's interesting to, I guess, note that the assassination attempt was based around his support for one of the political candidates in Jamaica at the time, and kind of how this album then fit into that broader context of the political context of Jamaica.
We talked a little bit during our review of Legend that Legend kind of softens his prophetic voice, and I found myself feeling like there was a bit more energy in his words in sort of a studio album format here, especially like you said, Mike, with the two sides. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like you can hear what he's trying to communicate a little bit better when it's not like redone for the modern palette kind of thing. Like there's a bit more of an edge to this one, and
like there's really definitely a concept that the yes. album gets across.
It's trying to take shape.
The compilation sort of lost in terms of the ordering.
One really neat kind of historic note: Time magazine named this the best album of the 20th century. So, 100 years. This was it. This was Time magazine.
That's pretty incredible, actually.
The best album. So it only winds up here on the Rolling Stone list, but if you had a different subscription, you might believe this is the number one album.
Oh wow! Ben, do we have to do another list? We have another podcast.
I don't know that that's a list, or if it was just like it was in an issue from 1999. So I'm guessing it was one of those retrospective things, like all the best of the last 100 years.
Best movie, so best song, best album.
Right.
Yeah. Best political scandal.
Right.
I would definitely say that, like, if I had to introduce someone to Bob Marley, this might be one of my first choices because it does. I don't think it's necessarily. It combines really well, like what I see is like the two sides of Bob Marley, which is kind of what we talked about, which is like the really political side, and then the side that's more talking about like everyday life and like what is and could be good about life, and then what needs to be resisted, sort of. I think so. This one kind of combines that in like a really direct way by having those two halves of the album, and it's a pretty good example of like I think the way he writes and the way he layers instrumentation. How he puts together the Wailers and how he directs them. So
yeah, this is another one of those long players in terms of chart success. I think Wikipedia says it was on the UK charts for 56 consecutive weeks. So
wow,
you know, sometimes these
these great albums just kind of hang out at the top and just keep getting purchased for a while.
Bram, we talked with you last time that you're a fairly big reggae fan in general, that you listen to a lot of different reggae. I think for those who are kind of into that and understand the history of it, this is maybe second or third album after Peter Tosh left the Wailers, which is a pretty big deal. So we see this the evolution of the band and the success. Yeah. The success, even though they had the departure and another member, but I'm blanking on the name. A couple left, I think, in 74, as I was reading. And so this is kind of a big deal that this album is so successful as well.
And it's interesting to hear kind of like, this is, I think, the first time that the band really has like their kind of signature sound, because before they had a lot more of a, I would say it was definitely an earlier reggae sound that they were kind of building off of what already existed. And there were a lot of interesting kind of experimental songs that they did. Like some were a lot more gospel influence. I think they actually did a couple of like direct gospel covers,
right?
And they did some stuff that was a little bit more in like the rock steady tradition, but then this was kind of where I think they started to nail down like their specific sound.
A couple more things before we really get into the music here. We love talking about the album artwork, and like I always say, please, if you pause the podcast or open up another window and look at it, but it doesn't get much simpler than this album cover. I don't even know what color that is, like a gold tan, one color, solid color, very small at the top in black, all caps letters, Bob Marley and the Wailers, top center, quite small, right in the middle, Exodus, in quite an interesting style of font. I don't know what that, I mean, it's obviously not a font.
I think it's supposed to mimic some of the calligraphy that's used in Amharic, which is the language which is spoken in Ethiopia. Ethiopia. Oh. So that kind of ties back to the Rastafarian connection, I think.
Interesting. It almost has a Hebrew look to me.
Ben, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, Amharic is another Semitic language. So
right.
They share a lot of commonality.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense, because I was kind of getting, it kind of looks like the X looks a bit like an Aleph, you know. Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes total sense. Thanks for pointing that out. So, I mean.
Oh, I forgot you're both familiar with Hebrew.
It's been a while, but a little bit. I mean, usually we could talk about it for a while, but there's really not much to say.
It's very similar to an album that we're going to be talking about soon. Neil Young's Harvest is coming up. Very similar color of the album and the title right there in the middle.
I want to move into some of our reflections and interactions with the music, and we can talk still about some of the songs and some of these cool stories. I hadn't listened to this album, and Ben, I don't think you had. You listened to this album?
No.
Start to finish before? No. Okay, so Bram, we know that, you know, you're a big fan. You've probably listened to Marley's catalog. We know you've listened to this. So my question to you, because I'm not going to ask you if you listen to it, we know the answer. My question to you is, do you remember when you listened to this album first? Did you go through, did you just kind of grab them as you got into it? Did you start with Legend, or did you go through them chronologically? Do you have any recollection of hearing this one for the first time?
I've only started listening to albums as albums within like the last year or so. So like before that, it was really me interacting a lot more on like a track by track basis. But like pretty much that was actually one of the first albums I listened to all the way, was Exodus, with something I would like put on in the background. It's probably one of the only albums. But like the way I see a lot of these songs are still as like individual tracks kind of.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot of people consume music like that. Do you mean like, you know, going on to Spotify and just listening to Marley?
Yeah, I would say so. But also like on the radio, like the first song I ever heard was that, like on the radio, that really got me interested in music on my own was One Love. So like that kind of That was definitely, but it was always like, I don't know, I feel like the songs off of Exodus are so imprinted in our, you know, cultural memory that like they get played a lot on the radio. Oh, so yeah. Like when you finally listen to the album, like you've already heard a lot of these as individual tracks. So you kind of can like focus more on how they fit together, if that makes sense.
I don't think there's on the radio any vacation, you know, Caribbean vacation ad or company that does, you know, last minute deals that doesn't use One Love in the background.
Yeah, which is super, super ironic because like, I think One Love really kind of encapsulates how people somehow like really willfully misunderstand a lot of Bob's catalog, you know, in terms of like, in terms of his like viewpoint and approach, because like
softening
him. Not the refrain, you know, which is very like, you know, love, hope, change, whatever. And then you've got the, like most of the lyrics, the stanzas, which are very like militant, honestly. And so I think that's kind of interesting to see.
I brought something because I don't think I own Legend, so I don't own any. I own only one reggae album, so this is the first and apparently only reggae album I bought. Okay, so this is Finley Quay, and I think when I bought it, I didn't even realize it was a reggae album. He's from the UK. This came out in '97, and I had heard it. The big hit was Sunday Shining, and I think there's interpolations of Marley stuff on that track and throughout the album. He's from the UK, and I had heard the song, and then we went on a band trip in '98, and we were on the bus or in a store. These tracks were all over the radio, so when I was there, I bought it. This is actually a UK version, not that it makes a big difference, and I didn't realize till years later that it was actually reggae music. It's that got that British kind of feel to it as well, but I was hearing stuff like I and I, like even on this, he uses a lot of that. And my whole life, even listening to Marley, I always thought they were saying Iron Eye, like I-R-O-N-E-Y-E. And I always wondered, what is that? What is that a religious thing? Is that a Rasta thing, a reggae thing? But he's saying I and I. Do you know what that is? Like, is that like two different, like his two different persons, or what is that?
So Iaric is like what the name for like Rastafarian dialect, sort of.
Okay.
And so like the term I and I, it sort of has like a layered meaning, because it's referring to saying that God is in you, but like every it's very much about like oneness. Actually, I'm going to read off of another Wikipedia page.
Sure.
In the words of Rastafari scholar E.E. Cashmore, I and I is an expression to totalize the concept of oneness. I and I as being the oneness of two persons. So God is within all of us, and we are one people, in fact. I and I means that God is within all men. So it's like, it's kind of talking about both, it's like a universalism, like a humanist universalism, and then kind of like a religious one as well.
Right. And
it has a lot of meaning in building.
I love it, and I love that's such a big, obviously, this is my obvious hat on, but such a big part of Bob Marley's music and lyric writing and his expression of who he is, and the message, the different messages that he's getting across. It's all bound together, especially in So Much Things to Say. He repeats it a few times. I'm not sure if he does any other tracks on the album, but that one for sure, in the last verse, he repeats it several times. So I kept thinking about it, wondering what that was. So thank you for for looking into that and sharing that with us, because that's an extra level of, I guess, enjoyment, but just intrigue of that there's another level of language here that certainly I'm not familiar, and probably most Westerners would not be familiar. Lots of people not be familiar with.
There's a lot of like stuff encoded, I feel like, mm-hmm. in Bob Marley's music, where like different people listening will get different things out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why it's been so popular over time.
I agree.
It kind of cross those boundaries.
And it's amazing, amidst that, with all that, you know, some very specific language, and speaking about specific situations in Jamaica and even in other parts of his community or the greater community, that it's so accessible. So many people, you know, just love it. And I think we talked about before, people not really maybe understanding the message and focusing on other parts of the message or the groove or whatever. But
well, I mean, I feel like it is very common to like, and I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily to listen to music for the instrumentation rather sure. than the lyrics. But it is still really interesting because you'll be like, you'll be listening to a really fun, like a Bob Marley song with a really fun beat, and then you start listening to the lyrics and you realize that it's about like it's like a guerrilla warfare, like, you know, it's talking about like an ambush, like a roadblock, you know.
Yeah,
right. So while we're on that thread, I noticed interesting, and maybe you can help again in that same song, So Much Things to Say, you know, I'll never forget, no way, they crucified Jesus Christ. And when I looked at the lyrics, it is spelled with two S's. And is that a just a dialect pronunciation thing, or is that a different way that they write about that historical figure? Are you familiar with that?
I feel like
at all?
It might be a dialect thing.
Okay.
But I do pick up on that as well when I listen.
Like when we're listening to One Love and he talks about the Holy Armageddon, is that like an aluminium thing?
Yeah, or? that extra syllable is really fun.
So I just found that like very interesting. And some pronunciations are like they just tuck in, but these are so kind of very, very intentional. And I like it.
I feel like he's rapping around the beat because like on both of those tracks, I think when he does that thing with the extra syllable, he's hitting a beat. And so he like raps it around.
Yep. No, I like that. I agree with that.
Bram, for someone who's spent a bit more time with this album, can you talk a little bit about the side A, side B concept? And does it feel appropriate to you that they're categorized in that way? Do you find yourself gravitating to one more than the other? How do you feel about the sort of division of the album that way?
I mean, I definitely like Marley's political stuff a little bit more, which I think I said a lot on the last episode I was featured on. But I think both sides work together really well, especially because I wouldn't say that the songs off of Exodus that are political are necessarily his most political. Like right. I actually kind of push back against that, which I think I've heard people say that this is where he got really political first. But like just looking through some of his past discography, there's a lot of songs off of like Catch a Fire, such as Concrete Jungle, 400 Years and Slave Driver, which are pretty political. And then in Natty Dread, which was 1974, you have Rebel Music and Revolution. Those tracks are also very political. And then Crazy Baldhead War and Rat Race in 1976 off of Rastaman Vibration. Like, I feel like those were all pretty intensely political and sometimes use language that he, like this one is a lot more symbolic in a way. So I think it ties together pretty well with like the other side.
And maybe that historic context that Mike mentioned of like being in exile himself might make people assume this is a more loaded album perhaps than what came before.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And it ties to like at the very end, he ties it together really well with One Love, which kind of has like the refrain and the melody of one of his more upbeat sort of, I guess like slice of life songs. But then it's like lyrical content is a lot more sort of revolutionary, I would say. I don't know if you would disagree with that, but I've always found that to, I think, be like the most interesting track for me off of the album.
Yeah, I like that.
As in One Love, like do you have any thoughts as to its content?
Mike and I have mentioned many times before that we're not lyrics first people. And so even as you were saying, just like a little bit before, how the verses are a little bit heavier than the chorus, I had to like think back, that's true. I'd never really considered that so much anymore.
Because he's like, is there any hope? Yeah. Is there any hope for the sinner?
Yeah.
Or no, right. The hopeless sinner who has saved all man, who has hurt all mankind in order to save his own beliefs, you know? And then he talks about Armageddon and like, there's a lot of really strong, I feel like, spiritual language there.
Yeah. Let's get together to fight this holy Armageddon. So when the man comes, there will be no doom. The lyric sheet I'm looking at, man, is capitalized, so that would be some sort of return, some sort of judgment. There ain't no hiding place from the Father of creation. Yeah, like it's personally, I just get so caught up, and I agree with you, there's nothing wrong with it, but I get so caught up in the groove
Yeah.
Well, the groove is very good, and I think that's what makes it work so well, is because it's like there's something for everybody, and like at least for me getting into it, I was like, oh wow, it sounds good. And then I was like, oh wow, there's a lot of lyrical. I basically was introduced to a lot of history of like the global South and the developing world, or I don't really like that term, but the global South and the global periphery through Bob Marley, you know?
Wow. I want to, but I owe it to spend more time with the lyrics. Like I, Ben said, you know, we admit we're not lyrics first people, but there are certain albums and songs, and this is one of them, where I'm reading them now and going, yeah, I want to come back to this, and I want to read through them as I listen and you know, do some research. There's a lot of very specific people mentioned, like in So Much Things to Say, mentioning specific people, specific incidents that I'd like to look up just for my own edification to understand the context a little better. But it's so good, like you don't have to. The music's so good.
Yeah. And the thing that's really, I think, great about this podcast is that both of you know a lot more about like the instrumentation and the technicalities of music production than I do, I would say. And just kind of the structure of albums, since you've been doing this for a lot longer. And so like I do, at least with Bob Marley, I tend to be drawn to the lyrics, but then it's nice to have someone to kind of bounce off of for the more technical stuff related to the production.
We fake it pretty well.
Well, on the last time with Legend, you started talking a lot about different like musical terms, and I was getting a little bit lost. I was like, wow, I'm glad somebody knew this. I would just go on a rant about Rastafarianism.
Yeah, no, well, and we'd like to have guests who can kind of fill in the gaps in our knowledge too.
A little bit, yeah.
I want to talk about the Wailers a little bit, because one thing I kept thinking about is I would listen to a track over and over and the components of it. You talked, Bram, earlier about this really being something that a lot of people categorize as the Wailers really coming into their signature sound. And I really feel like every member of the group has such a unique voice, especially in this album. There are so many songs where it's like Waiting in Vain, you know, the two different keyboard parts kind of playing back and forth. You have the kind of organ vamp, and then you have the lead going on. It's such a signature sound. So we personally, and I think a lot of people tend to think of Bob Marley, Marley music, right? That's a Bob song, you know, but it's Bob Marley and the Wailers, and they play such an important part in this sound, from, you know, the rhythm section to the keys I mentioned, the vocalists, the background vocalists, such a huge part. And I just really found myself getting into that side of it as well.
Yeah, I think the really interesting thing about the Wailers is they were kind of like even more so than a lot of bands, where a lot of bands have produced musicians who have gone on to even, I wouldn't say even greater things, but like, you know, equally great things on their own,
right,
or in other groups. I feel like the Wailers really, they were almost like a community because they were so large and they had so many people who like join and then would go do something else. And, you know, there was a lot of like movement. And in addition to that, you had Bob Marley's family, which was very large. He had a lot of kids and most of them have gone into music. So like, I think the amount of like the movement that the Wailers started was a lot larger than, might even be the case for other bands.
Right.
But you mentioned the organs, and I would really be interested in learning more about the choice of organ as an instrument on this, because it's really good, but it's kind of like it comes out of nowhere, you know. You're listening and you're like, wow, that's an organ.
Yeah.
Like right center stage.
Oh yeah. The song that really jumped out to me was The Heathen, and they've got this like booming, like this very crunchy distorted bass sound on the organ. It's very, it's ahead of its time. Like a lot of the sounds, I think, are very, you know, reggae was becoming more and more popular and was penetrating a North American audience, so that in itself was new. But there's a lot of sounds here to me that sound ahead of its time, and are really, really neat.
What one of the interesting things about, I think, reggae is that like people don't, it is a really unique sound, but it's kind of also almost more of a crossroads than it is like a genre of its own. Well, no, it is a genre of its own, but like it draws so much from other things. Like in the early days, I mentioned this earlier, but in the early days, the Wailers did like a lot of they were definitely reggae songs, but they were also definitely like gospel songs,
right.
Which with a like gospel style voice pieces and gospel. I think there were some with like organs pretty early on, but like they did that. And then I think there's also a part on The Heathen where they have like a guitar solo that's very kind of Hendrix-y almost. Mm-hmm. So there was definitely a lot of kind of back and forth between different genres within reggae. And like sometimes you'll hear a song and you're like, wow, that's really bluesy. And then you hear another song and you're like, wow, that's kind of like rock with that guitar solo, you know?
Yeah. But always it seems intentional to set a particular tone. I think that
definitely like the sort of religious
on the upbeat songs. There's that like kind of haunting organ on the more prophetic, darker songs.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Ben. It's the second side, which is a little lighter and more around the kind of love and faith and stuff. You get that higher, you know, higher on the, especially on the, you know, on the right hand with the piano, a lot higher up with One Love, very high up, tinkly kind of piano or the organ or guitar. Whereas you're right with the political, little more heavier thematically, you get some of those heavier sounds. I like that. That a lot.
There were also a few songs that really had like a super deep sort of dub reggae sound, which is a subgenre of reggae that's very focused on the instrumentation, kind of like creating this soundscape that has a lot of like volume and depth and stuff. And there was, I can't remember what song it was specifically. Oh, the Exodus track itself had that kind of depth going with the percussion, especially. Yeah. Like there were a lot of different forms of percussion and they were all at different distances in like the sound space, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. Mike, did you ever get into Elizabeth Mitchell? She's a children's folk song person, and she's got some wonderful covers, including one of Three Little Birds. And so when I hear this song, I think about like very, very young, my very, very young children who are much, much older now, and a different kind of era of music instead of listening to mostly Disney and musical soundtracks when we were the ones picking the sweet music to put on for them.
Yeah, you know, I almost forgot about, I didn't write anything down, but Three Little Birds is kind of an important song in our house. I don't want to get too personal because it's not my story to tell, but my wife Nora, who was on this show, had gone through something difficult, and Three Little Birds was kind of a refrain that really helped her along, and we kind of gravitated to it as well. And you'll see around our house a few different, there's a few pictures scattered around with three birds. And she actually has a tattoo on her back.
Oh, that's
of the three birds. Her sister, they were talking one night and they had both separately had a dream about three birds. And so they got the matching tattoos. So don't worry about a thing. Every little thing's going to be all right. I mean, that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people, but that's kind of been a refrain here, even in different situations. Every little thing's going to be all right. Taking it out of context, but the music and the songs are so powerful that they can do that. You can use them for other purposes. That's a good one.
No, I agree. And I think with Three Little Birds, it's like he really captures kind of like, I don't know, like a good motivation to want to keep going on, you know?
Yeah.
Just like the really little things, like remembering, you know, sunny days or something like that.
Yeah.
Like definitely he's a lot of songs that are about relationships and like human social interactions and kind of, you know, the back and forth there. I think sometimes when he just has a song about like a tiny little thing, you know, it just like really being mindful of his surroundings. That's kind of cool.
It's like kind of a song that just says, you know, breathe. And so much of pop music is not that. It's getting you amped up for something.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Settle down. Take it in. Yeah. I like that.
Yep.
I mean, we don't have to go track by track. I mean, jamming, like, there's such huge songs on this album. Sometimes it's unbelievable. It's like, when we listened to Ben, one of the first albums we reviewed, Hendrix Experience, Are You Experience? And it's like, how can you get away with having this many massive hits on one album? Like, how is this not a greatest hits album? And Exodus feels very similar, like just huge, massive hits all stacked together on this album. I mean, jamming has been, there's certain songs, like I said, I haven't listened to Marley albums like straight through, but there's songs I don't remember a time in my life not knowing about them. Like One Love, jamming, like those have just always, for me anyways, have always just kind of been part of the zeitgeist of the music that I know that's been there all the time.
Well, and this is what I expected to find as we work through this list, like albums that I wasn't familiar with, that I'd never pressed play on, but lots of familiarity as I go.
Right.
And it seems like we either get the extreme where we know almost everything or we know almost nothing. And this is a kind of a nice happy middle ground here where like a good portion of them are ones I've heard before, but there's also some new surprises. So yeah, I like that.
Ben, was it on The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill? Does she have her cover of Turn Your Lights Down Low? That might have been like a bonus track on a different release.
No, I think it's that album.
Is it on that album? So,
yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so is that obviously her connection with the Marley family, being married to Ro Marley for a while. So it's hard not to think about that as well, listening to it. And, you know, many people have taken these songs over the years and made them their own.
I guess there's like a really big sort of, I mean, I'd sort of go in this direction anyway, but the really, like a really big macro observation is how the whole album's concept is structured around this idea of Exodus, like going from Babylon to Zion, sort of.
Right.
And like on a real macro scale, in terms of the Rastafarian worldview, like Babylon would be represented by like the sort of colonial powers, especially like the United Kingdom and the United States, increasingly in a lot of reggae songs of that era. But like in this album's context, sort of what he's talking about is his own personal sense of like safety and sort of an ability to like rebuild when he moved to the United Kingdom.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Like his personal journey of exodus to escape from persecution in Jamaica. And that's kind of how he presents it in the album, is as like he's leaving Babylon to go to Zion, right? But like on a more macro sense, I feel like within the context of this album, he's also saying like he didn't really make it out, you know. He's like, he made it out of the frying pan into the fire, in a way.
Yeah.
And so he like finds a sense of community, but then the first half of the song is definitely him like still coming to terms with the fact that he is facing the same things, you know.
Right.
And he can't really leave behind what he left in Jamaica.
It's beautiful and inspires hope, but it's tough because he does in the first half identify all these issues and identify, I mean, he does in the second half as well, but heavier in the first half, identify the wrongs and the issues and the ongoing. And then the second half is in the midst of that, here's how we can inspire hope and carry on. But recognizing that those issues still exist, it's a very healthy view.
It's sort of like, I feel like my overall view of Marley's message is like, there will never not be oppression and persecution. Like, we can't really create I think a lot of people think he was utopian, but this is my personal view is that I think he had a pretty healthy understanding of the fact that humans are pretty flawed in the ways that we construct social systems. So I feel like his view was sort of like, there will always be persecution and oppression, and people will always try and exploit other people to some degree, but A, we can always fight back, and we can, you know, it's kind of like an eternal struggle, and then also there are always these good things, you know, that balance out, or like that sort of console us even when we're, you know, facing troubles.
Well, that's a wrap. That just that's a perfect, I love that.
That fits really well with him as a person, because he was complicated too, right? A lot of hope and optimism, and kind of messy, rough around the edges.
Right.
It's wonderful that this kind of echoes that part of who he was.
I know it's not on the overall list, but Bob Marley's album from, I think it was 1979, Survival, is interesting just to see that kind of evolution, where I think Survival is sort of all of the emotions from like the tracks like Guiltiness and One Love, you know, like the sort of lyrical content of One Love in an album form, where it's like his full sort of almost like his political manifesto. And then he released a bunch of other albums that were sort of more focused on the B side of Exodus, like the sort of slice of life stuff. So he started to kind of diversify. And I think like made it a little bit more of like an album specific thing, but this one really captures like both sides.
I want to listen to that Survival, and I'm a huge flag nerd. I've studied all the national flags of the world, and so the album cover for that one is just all
It's a really cool
cover. It's just tons of flags, like it's all flags. And I'd love to look into what they mean. And
I like that album because it's a little angrier, like they really get into the beats a lot more.
So right.
The percussion is really on point. And then when Marley gets like kind of, you know, really angry and like on a, you know, like a tangent about something political, like he gets really into it and he starts matching the beat. It's just, you know, it's a lot going on. And it's like no end to like the guiltiness type tracks, but just like over like a full, you know, hour's length. It's a little bit much, but like it's good.
That's the next one I want to listen to for sure. Yeah, I want to check it out. So we like to talk about how it fits in today's context. So the two questions blended into one. If anything, what has aged well and what hasn't? Bram, why don't you kick us off for that if you have something for that?
I definitely think that the messages that Bob Marley brings are like, especially on Exodus, the way he approaches it, it's very applicable to really any time, and regardless of one's position, there's something in the album to be found. But especially in terms of like the political side, I think it still holds true, rings true.
Does anything feel sort of dated?
A lot of Bob Marley's work is pretty dated to the Cold War, and this one, I would say Exodus a little bit.
Specific political thing that he's speaking to. Yeah.
Yes, I can't remember the song or the album, but he talks about like the space race, and on this one, I would say that like if you know the context, it sort of fits pretty specifically into like Jamaican politics and like decolonialization and stuff at the time, but. I mean, I think like what he's talking about is pretty relevant. And even when he's talking about other things in other albums, like he's talking a little bit more about the reality of life in a zone of civil war, for example, all of that is still pretty true and accurate. But in terms of talking about, you know, colonialism and an empire and stuff like that, I think he's still on point.
I've been surprised this week in listening to this more frequently. Reggae music sounds like reggae music. Even reggae music being made today sounds fairly similar to this. So while it I think the way that it feels dated to me is historically where Bob Marley fits into time. Not because the music sounds necessarily like it was done and old equipment or something like that. It's just, I know that he has passed away, right? So it's really hard to disconnect that from the knowledge that this is from a few generations back. And so that makes it a weird thing to kind of age.
Ben, I agree with you on that. And I was really thinking a lot about that. I'm very ignorant on reggae in general. I would be hesitant to say, you know, that reggae hasn't evolved or changed.
No.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you were saying that, but I would say, like, to me, like this reggae is reggae in my listening, and what I mean by that is, it doesn't matter to me, and I think a lot of people when it comes on in a public space, nobody's saying, you know, this is 45 years old, like it still really hits very well. It's kind of like, you know, I'd compare it even to the Beatles. You don't listen to the Beatles music and go, boy, oh boy, that sounds like almost 60 years old. Like, we know it's from the 60s, but it's the Beatles. Like, this to me, I think has aged very, very well musically. Some of the keyboard sounds, maybe just the technology a little bit, but not much. And
even the chorus girls sometimes in the background sound a little like from another era, but I could see a modern artist bringing in chorus girls in that same way. So
yeah, I would say like there's definitely a move towards like retro sounds today. And I guess I would say if I heard a song off of Exodus on the radio and I didn't know anything about Bob Marley, I probably wouldn't say it was a modern song or like a 21st century song, but I wouldn't be able to like pin it down and say this is a song from the 70s or this is a song from, you know, whatever.
And sure.
I might push back a little bit and say that I do think reggae has changed a fair amount, just in terms of like what Bob did was, I mean, pretty specific, like his style, but like, I guess a little bit more generally, like he was very much like a roots reggae kind of guy, you know, and at least in recent years, it's moved a lot more towards like the dance hall kind of side
yeah,
of things.
Okay.
And
yeah.
More
yeah.
Like hip hop syncretization there.
Yeah.
You know?
No. And you're right. And like I said, I wouldn't want to comment on that very much because I'm fairly ignorant in it, but
I agree with, I like, it's definitely very timeless.
Yeah, you know? That's the word I was going to say. Like it is quite timeless and it seems to, like when we talked about Legend, I can't imagine putting Legend on or a lot of this on Exodus on in a room and people not starting to physically react in a positive way. Like it's just got a great, yeah. A great feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even listening as you all were hopping online tonight, like it was in my headphones and I could feel myself kind of rocking to the,
yeah,
the rhythm of it, in a way that was not intentional. I was not dancing along. It was just the music was forcing my body to do that.
And that slow, we didn't talk about this, but the, you know, great intro track of Natural Mystic and that slow fade in,
like
you can barely hear it and it comes in like that, I think really sets.
And the beat is really good.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like an interesting, it's almost like a suspenseful kind of old.
Oh, yeah. And it really draws you in, like, because you're almost, it's funny how it's almost a reverse thing. It grabs your attention because you're like really focusing, like, oh, is there something there? It's coming. Something's coming. What is that? And then it gets.
Yeah, it's loud. Not like it puts you on edge, but no. It's like, it's almost like that kind of anticipation, like yeah. Sound in like a thriller movie or something, you know?
It's fantastic. Like, album number 71, which is really cool. A big jump. What do you guys think about the position here? And it's not too far away from Legend, which is 48. And a lot of this album is on Legend. So, Ben, why don't we start with you? What do you think about the ranking here?
Oh, boy. I think I'm in a danger zone here of getting into the weeds about compilation albums and whether they deserve to be on this list. I'm surprised, given, you know, what I mentioned early in the episode about Time magazine calling this the greatest album of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that this isn't higher. And while I know Legend has been a phenomenal success in terms of the number of records moved, I would prefer to see those two switched. I know that's personal preference, and maybe, you know, I'm guilty of having listened to Legend and not Exodus, and I'm guessing that's the case for a lot of people. And so maybe when you do a poll of people, that's the way that this will shake down. But now, having listened through both of them, I wish this one was higher, personally, and I like it more as a constructed artist constructed studio album than a producer selected greatest hits. So I think it needs to be higher. I'm glad it has moved up. I hope it will be moved up more once they decide to remove compilation albums from this.
I completely agree on both of those points. I think at the very least they should have been switched. Just given that I think that Exodus just works together so well.
Yeah.
And like it really does represent that kind of turning point or like a kind of evolution in his music. So.
Absolutely. I do struggle with this because, you know, Legend is such a astronomically successful album. I think as an album, not a compilation, this, I agree, works so well, really sets that signature sound of the group. And yeah, I could see it a little higher. I struggle with pulling Legend down lower because I think it's just has been such an important album for culture in general and a lot of individuals. So as much, I think when we've talked about compilation albums, Ben, and I think if there's any exceptions, I would make one for Legend because it's just quite a unique, we talked about some of its shortfalls, but it's quite a unique compilation. So I do agree, but I still think it has its place there. And just for context, before we close out here, we always like to talk about if there's any other albums by the artists on the top 500. So we talked about Legend. That's number 48. It only dropped two spots. Exodus here, 71, was previously 169, so jumped up almost 100 spots. Then we have Catch a Fire from 1973 at number 140. That's an interesting one. It wasn't on the first list. It was in the coffee table book, which is quite rare. Then it wasn't on the second list at all. And it was number 125. It wasn't like it was 499. 125 in the coffee table book, not appeared in the 2012 list, and then is back here at 140. So that's Catch a Fire. So three albums. There's a fourth album, and that's Natty Dread from 74, was 181 on the previous list from 2012, but has been dropped from this list. So it's not. So when we go back, Ben, when we finish the 500 and do all the albums that were dropped, we'll circle back to Natty Dread.
About we'll get one more Bob Marley. Yep.
15 years from now.
Yeah, there'll be another Rolling Stone list by then too, so we'll have to go
at least
redo
one.
That. And yeah.
Ben, what do we got coming up next week? I think you mentioned it earlier.
I mentioned it earlier. Coming up here, we get a little bit more additional Canadian content. I feel like we're almost getting spoiled here with Alanis and now Neil Young, number 72. His Harvest album comes in at the 72 spot here on the list.
Bram, we want to thank you so much for joining us again. It's been an absolute pleasure having you and your insight and your knowledge. Thanks again for sharing this time with us.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thanks, Bram. Means a lot. Too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All you at home, we want to thank you for joining us and listening to the SoundLogic podcast. Until next time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you. And of course, we hope you'll join us again next time right here on the SoundLogic podcast. Take care, everyone, and thanks for listening.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.